Welcome to the SI Media Podcast. No, this is not Richard Deitch's voice. Probably expecting to hear Richard. This is Jimmy Traina from SportsIllustrated.com. Let me fill you in on why you're hearing my voice and not Richard's. As you know, if you're on Twitter, Richard recently, unfortunately, and I'm very sad about it, decided to leave SI. He's joining The Athletic, and he's doing a radio gig in Toronto, and I'm very happy for him about that, because ever since I've known Richard, about 15 years now, maybe even more, I know he's always wanted to do radio, so I was glad that that happened for him. Unfortunately, it took him to Toronto, and he's also departing SI. So SI wants to keep this podcast going, thanks to Richard building it up, creating it, booking it. He did a ton. It's a successful podcast, and SI wants to keep it going, and very honored that they asked me to take it over. I'm very excited about it, and, you know, obviously big shoes to fill, because Richard did a phenomenal job with this podcast. I know many of you, you know, may not like the change, but hopefully you'll stick around, give me a chance. We're going to stick to doing a lot of media things. You know, Richard comes at it as a journalist. I sort of come at it more of as a fan, but we're both passionate about the topic. So hopefully we will still keep you interested while I take over here. Like I said, it will still be media-based for the most part. I do like to talk to athletes every now and then, maybe a celebrity every now and then, but media will always be discussed on this podcast. That's what you're here for, so that's what we're going to give you. So stick around. I know it's a big change, but we're going to keep it rolling. And on this episode, just to show you that we're going to keep it rolling, we have James Andrew Miller, the authority on all things ESPN, who wrote that bombshell, well, I shouldn't say wrote, he did a bombshell interview with former ESPN president John Skipper last week, who revealed that the reason he had left ESPN is because he was part of this cocaine extortion plot. So we're going to talk to Miller, who did the interview with Skipper. He also wrote the book on ESPN, literally. And we're going to talk to him about other media topics as well. Monday Night Football, ESPN's new president, FS1. Get into a little bit of everything with James Andrew Miller. And that'll be my first episode of the SI Media Podcast. Hopefully you enjoy it. And please hit me up with feedback on Twitter, at Jimmy Traina. I'd love to hear what you guys want to see hear on this podcast. Any guests, any bits, any segments, let me know. I'm open to anything, at Jimmy Traina on Twitter. And you can see my work every day on SI.com, Traina Thoughts. So check all that out. And now here's James Andrew Miller. Jim, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. You're coming off a big week. You did the first interview with John Skipper after his departure from ESPN.
Oh, yeah, I heard of him.
Yeah. How long in the making was that interview?
I don't know, 12 years.
And was it difficult to finally get him in that early March week?
I think, he went through an awful lot in December, and then he went into, as he said, he got treatment. So I think that that took time. And, I wanted to be respectful of his timing, but at the same time, I wanted to be aggressive about, you know, the fact that I thought that there were some things that just weren't clear,
right,
and just wanted to get to those.
So the two big questions I think that came out of your interview that I saw were, one, when he was being extorted after according to him, one bad cocaine deal, why did he or ESPN not go to authorities? Do we know the answer to that question?
I'm not at liberty to talk about that one.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. So, let me see how I can word this.
Let me just say this about that.
Go ahead.
Somebody said to me, boy, I wish you would have found out who the extortionist was.
Right.
And I said, well, I don't really care. I had 3,000 words to play with in that piece, and I wanted to understand what was, you know, the critical element that changed, you know, his life and the trajectory of that week. And when I heard about the fact that he was being extorted, I wanted to spend a little bit more time on that than, you know, whether or not we knew the person's name.
Right.
If it was, you know, that's all.
I think the reason people want to know about that is because it sort of ties into the other question I had about it is why. I know in the interview he said, you know, he went to Bob Iger, he let him down, let the company down, and that was it. Why was there any talk, and if not, why not, of a go get help and come back? Why did it have to be this is it?
Well, I had asked that in my Hollywood Reporter column in January, you know, right after the whole thing kind of fell out. And I think you'll have to ask Disney about that.
That's my thing on this is, you know, obviously the cocaine thing happened. How much of a role, though, did ESPN's very, very rough 2017 play a part in them not offering him maybe a second chance, if at all?
Right. So, I mean, anything you're going to hear from me now is based on conjecture because I did not sit down with Bob Iger and I don't know what is in Bob's head. And I'm very hesitant to believe certain people who say that they do know what's in Bob's head. I mean, you know, Iger is certainly one of the most successful media execs of the last quarter century. He's perfectly capable of talking for himself, and he'll be curious to see if the you know, there is a time that he decides to do it. There's a lot to be read into it, and there's a lot of ways to kind of go past, you know, the facts that we know. And so you could say, well, if they really loved the guy, then they would have said, we're sorry that you have this problem. Go take care of yourself and come back. And, you know, we want to help you, and we still want you to be part of the company.
Right.
I mean, that's a possibility. But the other part of it is that it may not necessarily be true, because I think that there's, given the fact that there was this extortion, that, you know, to be fair to Disney, they may have thought, well, what else is out there,
right,
in terms of this world that he was living, this private world that he was living, I should say. And, you know, can we as a public company face the exposure of, you know, something else happening? So that's to say that, you know, he goes away and he gets better and he comes back and he says, I'm in recovery and I understand this now better. And then 6 months later, it turns out somebody else, you know, he was in a circumstance in this private world with somebody else. So I can appreciate, I'm not trying to be, you know, equivocate about this, but I think that there are considerations on both sides.
Do you think this story is over?
I mean, look, the story is it's such an outlier, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you have arguably one of the most powerful people in sports, and given ESPN's importance to Disney and its, you know, prominence as one of a worldwide brand, I mean, how often does something like this happen? So I think that it's going to be of continued interest, intrigue, you know, because it certainly has some other provocative elements to it. So, you know, I don't think people – I never – did that interview thinking, well, okay, nobody's going to want to talk about this anymore.
Right, right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean,
well, especially when, like you said earlier, there, you know, whether you don't care or not, there is interest in the extortion plot. And
by the way, it's not that I don't care. It's that I went into that knowing that I had 3,000 words to play around with.
Right.
And so I just had to establish, you know, a kind of a hierarchy of needs, at least for myself, you know, and for the reader, which I thought were the most important things. You know, one of the things that I wanted to construct and was a timetable for that week, because when Skipper resigned, I think that there was probably at least 24 ESPN employees who reached out to me, and then I had conversations with others who said, like, that speech that he gave before the entire company, just, you know, on that Wednesday. I mean, I guess he already knew he was resigning. We always believed that John Skipper was, you know, straight with us and a sincere guy. And, you know, I had said in the column that I wrote in January, I didn't think he was a good enough actor to pull that off. So one of the things that, you know, I think you saw in the article, the interview, was I wanted to establish right from the beginning. When you stood behind in front of those ESPN employees and you talked about the future and you talked about, you know, wanting to be there with him, with them, did you already decide that you were resigning? And it turns out he had no...
Right.
He had no thought about resigning. Didn't have any idea at all.
Right. That was a piece of the puzzle that was always mysterious. You did a great job with that in the article, where it all came down to that one Friday, as you detailed in the Hollywood Reporter interview. That Friday is when it all came crashing down, basically, because, like you said, Wednesday he gives the all-hands-on-deck meeting. Monday he's out. So it was that Friday.
Well, not to mention that Thursday he called me and said, because we had been planning a big meta future of ESPN and what's gone on during his thing interview for like maybe 6 or 7 months. And he had called me and said, all right, let's get together and do this, or at least do the first part of it, you know, next week.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking to myself, when I heard the resignation, I'm thinking, there's just no way yeah. that the guy knew on Thursday even, because he just wouldn't have done that. There's no reason to try and create a, you know, a shell game here. So it was awfully suspicious to me.
Yeah, and not to beat the dead horse, but because when I read your interview, I really enjoyed the fact that you brought up the Letterman thing. And I think that's what leads me to still question about why. I mean, and like you said, you can't discuss it, so I'm not asking you to discuss it. But again, someone is saying they're going to extort you after you bought cocaine for them. When Letterman had the extortion thing for having the affair, the authorities handled. I mean, he came on the air that night after the situation was completely over and done with in terms of the authorities taking care of it. It's still weird to me that was not the route ESPN and Skipper took there.
Well, it's not ESPN, it's Disney and
right.
It's, you know, I think if you kind of look at it closely, Dave was in a different situation, which is kind of what I learned that day, which is, right? I mean, Dave didn't resign.
Right.
Let's just leave it at that.
Okay.
There's a little bit of a difference there.
Okay. And that's, yeah, and I think everyone's waiting for that difference to come out. And I still, I mean, just as a media observer, it's still hard for me to believe if ESPN did not have the 2017 that they had. And I'm not talking about ratings, because, I mean, it's so wrapped up into cord cutting right now and just the time we live in terms of media. But it was one controversy after another, whether, you know, Jamel and the, you know, SportsCenter 6 was a problem. Their ESPN pregame show was a major problem. The NFL pregame show was a problem. The Barstool thing was, I mean, that was that story gets worse and worse for ESPN as time goes on. I mean, they made a deal with Barstool and now they're banning their people from going on Barstool podcasts. I mean, it was a rough 2017 outside of ratings. And I can't imagine that not playing some factor in just cutting ties with Skipper after the extortion thing. But I guess ESPN's never going to say, you know, Disney's never going to say that.
Well, I think, though, that there's part of an answer in the selection of Jimmy Pitaro to replace John, because I think that, you know, look, I think that Jimmy Pitaro is a trusted lieutenant of Bob Iger's, and I think that under Pitaro, the nexus of Burbank, let's say Burbank needs and Burbank desires, is going to be closer fused than it would be under than it was under Skipper and Burbank. That's not to say that Skipper was rebellious, but I think that there are probably 5 or 6 moments over the last 4 or 5 years where Skipper, you know, Burbank wanted to do X and Skipper wanted to do Y, and he stuck to it, and give Bob Iger credit, because then at that point it wasn't like he fired him. But, you know, it's clear that I mean, look, on major things about whether or not to spend, you know, $15.3 billion on Monday Night Package or whatever, Bristol will always have to get Burbank's approval, and Burbank is always going to drive that truck. But on other things, I think, you know, Bob Iger is a he's not a micromanager, and he empowers his you know, the people who work for him, and so he did. And there were times when Skipper disagreed with him, and Iger decided, you know, I'm not going to fire him, but that's not certainly what I want. I mentioned one of them in the January column, which was that, you know, Skipper had said no to when Jimmy Pitaro's services were offered a couple of years ago, you know, to coming over, not to replace John, but just to help him out.
Right.
And I think that part of Bob's thinking at the time, although I don't know for sure, was that, you know, he wanted somebody to be inside that he could look to as a real successor, and that there wasn't anybody inside that he thought was a successor. And by and large, that has proven to be the case. You know, there aren't, interestingly enough, there aren't a lot of people. Well, let's put it this way. There's a good portion of Skipper's direct reports from several years ago that are no longer at the company. And then a couple others have been had their responsibilities, you know, reduced. So I think there are many people out there who thought that Iger saying, I don't, where Iger thinking, at least possibly thinking, that that the Skipper bench wasn't as strong as he wanted it. I think that, you know, over time, Skipper himself decided that that was the case. So there were some notable departures with Wildhack and Kosner and Marie Donahue and others. That's not to say that he didn't appreciate their work or whatever, but let's just say, bottom line, they're not at the company.
Right.
So, you know, that's a long-winded way of saying that I think that Jimmy Pitaro is going to be more of an ambassador for Burbank's desires than Skipper was.
I'm glad you brought up Pitaro. I want to just spend a minute on him before we transition into some other media things. But for the fan who's out there who's not into the minutiae of, you know, the inside Bristol, the presidents and the business side of it, just the fan who watches ESPN, is there anything you can tell us about what to expect from Pitaro in terms of either programming or shows? Do we have any insight into that yet? Do you know anything about him from that standpoint that you can give the viewer a little Cliff Notes version on Jimmy Pitaro?
Well, I mean, look, I think that he arrives at a time when we're going to, you know, it's not so much about what do we know about his taste so far, because it wasn't like he was head of content for a competitor or for another, you know, content provider within the Disney empire. Like, you know, this is going on at ESPN. But I think that the amazing thing about the timing is he's going to have a hell of a lot of chances and examples to show us, because let's just go really quickly. You got Get Up starting in the beginning of April.
Right.
And that was something that, you know, was done under the Skipper era. A lot of us scratched our heads just at the commitment of time and money and resources to it. It's a pretty big roll of dice, given just the salaries and people involved with Mike Greenberg and Michelle Beadle and Jalen Rose. You know, now, if it gets out of the blocks and it's a hit, or if it even grows to be a hit, then there's not much that Jimmy has to decide about that. You know, he may want to be, you know, have Connor Schell and the content team doing some fine tuning or whatever. But, you know, if it's success, then he'll ride that. If it's not, then, you know, or if he doesn't think it is, then that'll be interesting to watch, because, you know, maybe Skipper would have given it more time, given the fact that he gave birth to it. Maybe there was a bigger margin of error for Skipper. You know,
right.
Maybe, you know, maybe we're going to see how quickly Jimmy, you know, his patience on things if it doesn't jump out of the gate. That'll be interesting to see. Now, obviously, Connor Schell has been head of content, has been working on this show since the beginning of it, and one has to assume that in addition to Bill Wolf, who's the executive producer, Connor has had, you know, some significant input, as he would have to have as head of content. And so, maybe it's going to be a hit. But let's go quickly through the other. Monday Night Football booth, you know, they need to get somebody. They need to figure out their shoulder programming around their NFL packages, because I think that, you know, a lot of those shows are in intensive care, and for a variety of different reasons. Each one has their own particular problems. I think that, you know, SportsCenter SC6 has obviously, it was like basically being broadcast from Three Mile Island for all its difficulties, and they need to solve that. Maybe they can just put Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann on and call it a day, and can all just rejoice.
I know people. Olbermann doing stuff for ESPN is just it really is jarring when you see that after everything that's happened with Keith. It's amazing that he was on PTI a couple of weeks ago.
Well, it's jarring, except, I mean, look, I understand that there's a lot of people that, I mean, at least 38% of the country then, who might look at him and get carsick because of his overdetermined political views.
Yes.
And they can't, you know, they won't let him out of politics jail.
I have to say, though, I love the ESPN having the balls to put him on, only from the point of, you know, they've been taking so much stuff about their liberal agenda, quote unquote, and they were like, okay, here's Keith. I kind of loved it from that standpoint. You know, whether you agree, disagree. I mean, I think, you know, listen.
But the beauty is that he's not. They didn't bring him back to do anything political,
right?
And let's just say what it is, which is, you know, he's unbelievably good at what he does in sports. There is nobody. Norby, when I did the podcast on SportsCenter, Norby Williamson, who's been there since, you know, the T-Rex days, has said, you know, he was the best person ever to do SportsCenter.
Wow.
He's, you know, when Mickey Mantle dies and he has to write the appreciation, it's like he's, doing his one finger typing in like 15 minutes without having to look at any research. I mean, he's got the numbers in his freaking head. I mean, he's really, really good at it. So, I mean, I think if they had brought him back on a show where he was going to be talking with Jemele Hill about whether or not people should be kneeling, that's like, you might as well just shoot yourself in the face at that point.
I bet you that show would get big ratings, though.
I think that show would probably be, there'd probably be, you know, bills on the floor of Congress to get it off the air.
That show would do big ratings, though. And Fox News could tear it apart every night, and they'd get a lot of online play. Yeah.
Yes, well, there you go. But I just, in terms of a pure sports play,
yeah, not good for that.
Still pretty impressive.
This episode of the SI Sports Media Podcast is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Buffalo Wild Wings loves a Cinderella story. It's the tale of the underdog, the unexpected. And by their unexpected nature, you just can't predict when one is going to happen. It makes them great, but also makes them frustrating, because at any moment, you could miss that Cinderella sighting unless you're spending March at B-Dubs, the official hangout for NCAA March Madness. Here, you'll catch every second of every game, and you'll be able to look back and tell the story of the team you watch climb their way from a low seed to the champions. But only if you go to Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Today's episode is also brought to you by Mattress Firm. Guys, before we move on, let me tell you about Mattress Firm. Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise. But know this, they are more than just mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor, they have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee, so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. You touched on Monday Night Football and all. I want to get into all that. We're going to transition to that in 1 second. I want to just go back to Skipper on one issue that I'm going to bring up out of left field, and I don't even know if you know anything about it, but I'm going to throw it out there. The thing I also find fascinating in about the interest in the Skipper story, it was there as after your interview was released last week. It was trending on Twitter. People were into it. The Jamie Horowitz departure from FS1 was like a blip on the radar compared to the Skipper thing. And I know that the Horowitz thing happened before the Me Too thing really exploded, which I, you know, if the Horowitz thing happens maybe 3 months later than when it did, it's a whole different ballgame. But the Horowitz thing happens, he leaves FS1, and we have not heard word one about him. And meanwhile, the Skipper thing keeps going and going. Is it because, I don't know, like you said earlier at the beginning, I think, of this podcast, the cocaine thing, extortion, is so unique. We don't see stories like this.
Well,
or is it, it's just, I mean, ESPN, no offense, and nobody cares about FS1?
No, I mean, Jimmy, I think that, look, first of all, no offense to Jamie, but I don't think Jamie Horowitz and John Skipper, and I think Jamie Horowitz would be the first one to say this, I don't think that they're at the same level.
I agree. But he's running, so, he was running the, I mean, I use the term loosely, competing company. That's the only parallel I'm drawing there.
Yeah, I guess Eric Shanks is probably more.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But
fair.
But I think that, no, I just don't, I think that, you know, the, I think Skipper's, it's just a different level. I think it's, it's just hard. I do think, though, that one of the other things that came out in the Skipper interview were, for the people who thought that the drug thing was just an excuse to cover up,
right, sexual harassment, yeah.
Potential. I mean, you cannot have anybody say anything more declarative than Skipper did,
right,
about that. And by the way, I'm sure you hear your share of things, you know, every day. I mean, I yep. certainly do. And, you know, all these rumors about, oh, yeah, no, it's her, it's this, it's that, it's that. None of them have proved to be true.
Right.
And I think that John Skipper, you know, saying what he did that day, I haven't heard, you know, one person since then who's tried to run that one up the flagpole.
Right. Yeah, the Horowitz thing fascinates me because it sort of came and went, and I guess it is a, you know, I mean, FS1 is not really a blip on the radar these days, so I don't know, maybe that's the reason. But let's transition. We're going to go in a totally different direction, and let's get into a little bit. You mentioned it. I want to get into a little more in depth. Monday Night Football and the NFL and ESPN's relationship with the NFL, the NFL draft. Let's start with the draft. ESPN, they had no clue that the NFL was giving the draft to Fox on a simulcast with the NFL Network. They had no idea this was happening.
Oh, you're referring to my tweet yesterday, which ESPN said, a couple people said, why did you have to mention that? I thought it was, it's not morally repugnant. I mean, but, you know, look, you're partners, right? The NFL is partners of ESPN. They're throwing like a, you know, $2 billion a year the NFL's way. So technically, does the NFL have to tell ESPN that they're doing that with Fox? Absolutely not. But did they? What does that suggest?
Right. Now, listen, I'm not...
I think there's a strained relationship there. It's been there for a long time.
Why do you think that is? What do you think the main cause of that is?
I mean, look, you know, the history is long. Several years ago, I wrote a piece for the New York Times about the fact that the league took John Skipper and John Waldhack out to lunch and just ripped them apart publicly for, you know, the documentary series Frontline, which then resulted in ESPN pulling out of that partnership. There has always been, there's two kind of parts of ESPN, which is the journalistic side and the broadcasting programming side, And not to oversimplify things, but I think that the people, the Bob Lees of the world, and many others, many others, take great pride in the fact that they cover the league, you know, as if they weren't a partner, or the fact that they're a partner doesn't matter. They are going to write about concussions. They're going to write about other things that the league does that, you know, they think are irresponsible, or they're just going to report on them without even making a judgment. And they want to be able to do that. Whereas I don't think that, let's say, you know, Fox has such a such an ambitious agenda for its journalistic, for enterprise journalism, you know, covering the league. So it might be that it's, you know, if you're at the league, I mean, look, during Bud Selig's reign as, you know, MLB commissioner, you know, I think that there's a, you know, there were a lot of stories about how he would react to yet another ESPN steroid story, yet another ESPN steroid story. And, you know, it, in some situations, it just can't help but hurt the relationship. The odd thing is that ESPN pays the league more than anybody else.
That's the part of this that I can't figure out, and I'm not, you know, I'm probably not smart enough to figure it out, and I don't know, I'm not a math wizard, but if ESPN is paying the NFL $15.2 billion for that package of games on Monday Night Football, you'd think...
Well, plus I know 100 for the wild card game.
Right, so which they're not even, which they might not even get now because they're going to give it to Fox, maybe.
Well, I said that yesterday because I thought, you know, for $600 million, look, we're still figuring out what Fox got for that. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's the league, technically, and I think ESPN realizes this, the league can give it, the wild card game, to Fox.
Right.
If they want. It's not like ESPN has that wrapped up. So that's why I mentioned
Well, that's yesterday. The thing. ESPN's paying $15.2 billion if they don't have a wild card, even if they have a wild card game. I mean, they're paying $15.2 billion to add a mediocre game on Monday nights, and they get one wild card game a year. And the NFL treats them like garbage. I mean, it's a bizarre relationship on every level.
Well, I think that, you know, part of it was that I think the equation has changed a little bit. But look, at the time that the deal was made, certainly the deal before that, the league is very, very aware that that ESPN needed football.
Right.
It needed football to justify and to keep bringing those sub fees into you know, its coffers. And I think that one of the things that that Michael Eisner did was when he, before they went to the full season, he had George Bodenheimer go around and extract big promises, like otherwise known as 20% annual increases, compounded for 7 years before he committed to that full year of football. So if you're the NFL, you think, okay, wait a second. They're bringing in all that money, and so we kind of can take them for granted. I mean, they could have also said, they're our best friends, and we're going to treat them extra special, but it turns out that they really didn't do that.
Right.
The interesting thing, though, that, you know, I had mentioned when I wrote about the Monday Night Football deal is ESPN now, with its carrier agreements, no longer has those clauses in there where they need to have the NFL. And I think that's I just think that's one of the most important factors, you know, in ESPN's business landscape over the last decade.
That
is amazing that they were able to pull that off.
It does seem like it's all going to lead to the NFL moving on from ESPN because, I could see Turner maybe bidding on a Monday night package. I'm not even going to get into what the streaming stuff, but if Fox just paid $60 million per game for Thursday Night Football, the NFL can easily part ways with ESPN and not feel any after effects from it, in my opinion.
I don't know. First of all, they need ESPN as a bidder. But second of all, they're happy to take ESPN's money. You know, they have no problem taking their
money. Right.
They may have a problem like giving them a good game on Monday nights.
Yeah, the NFL will take anybody's money. So
I mean, you know, so I think the bigger question is whether or not ESPN would want to re-sign renew. And I think the fact that Jimmy Pitaro, the biggest thing that I can say, from my opinion, that is going to be different from Skipper to Pitaro is I believe that Skipper would have been very reticent to renew the Monday Night Football deal, mm-hmm. at least to say to Bob Iger, I don't want to do it. I want to just buy the highlights package, and then I might, you know, see whether or not we want to go big on one of the other packages, Sunday afternoon or Sunday night.
Right.
But I think that Bob Iger is very comfortable with the NFL. I think he likes the NFL product, and I think that, you know, Jimmy Pitaro is going to, you know, follow his boss's lead on that. Whereas Skipper, I think, would have been probably pounding the table saying, let's get out of here.
Yeah. I also think it's a little underrated how much the Thursday night game coming along has hurt the Monday night game from the standpoint of the NFL week now starts on Thursday. And by Monday night, yes, the games are usually not great. And then on top of that, I think by Monday night, after you get that Thursday night game, and then, you know, they've been trying the stuff with Sunday mornings with London. I just think, you know, unless you're like, you know, trying to win your fantasy week and you're a degenerate gambler, unless you're, you know, it's hard to then strap in for another 4 hours of a rough game. I think that Thursday night
but
game.
But it's not even just the hours. I mean, Thursday night football is my least favorite element of professional sports.
See, I prefer the Thursday night game to the Monday night game because it starts the week of NFL football. But that's
just
me. No,
but it's just about greed because, it is just awful for scheduling. It's awful for injuries. I mean, it's just, there's just not enough good teams.
Right.
And there's not enough good players. And, and the result is ESPN signed that Monday Night Football deal thinking, you know, some people originally thought that they were going to be getting the real Monday night schedule. It turns out that NBC got that
right,
for Sunday night.
Right. Right.
Then all of a sudden Thursday night comes along. And now they have the fourth worst schedule. So I think they're allowed to be bitter.
This episode is also sponsored by Hims. Let me tell you guys a little bit about Hims, a new wellness brand for men. Did you know 66% of men lose their hair by age 35? And the thing is, by the time you really start to notice hair loss, it is too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Do you have any bald spots? Is your hairline moving further and further back, a la LeBron James? What happens in a year from now if you keep losing your hair? Well, we have a solution for you. 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness, all for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. I have a full head of hair that's all gray. I wish that can be optional, but right now it's getting worse and worse. But 4hims.com will connect you to the real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescription to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills, no gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. That alone right there, because you know when you go to the doctor, it's usually 2 hours after your appointment, and then you're there waiting in the waiting room. Just go to 4hims.com. They'll get you all hooked up. It's so easy. All you have to do is answer a few quick questions. The doctor will review and prescribe you. And to make it even easier, all the products are shipped directly to your door. Order now. My listeners get a trial month of Hims just for $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details. This will cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/media. That's FORHIMS.com/media. 4hims.com/media. A couple of quick rapid fire things. Do we know what Peyton Manning's going to do? Is he going to go to Fox? Do you have any insight on that, or that's not your domain?
I don't believe he's dancing with ESPN.
Right. They say it's down to Fox.
Yeah, I don't believe. I mean, look, I think that, you know, Peyton has to think about whether or not he wants to do it and whether or not he wants to hear people comparing him to Tony Romo.
Right, right.
And whether or not, you know, there was in earlier discussions I had heard, now, you know, maybe this isn't true, but I had heard that he felt uncomfortable about doing games with Eli, that Eli was in.
Oh, okay.
And maybe some people that maybe some people who listen to John Gruden do a Redskins game when his brother was coaching.
Right.
Maybe say, "Oh, that's a good idea." You know, you can't really do that. That was really awkward. But
yeah.
You know, the Giants and the NFC East. I mean, that's a you know, that's not easily taken out of the equation.
Right.
You know, so I think there are some other factors for Peyton. You know, and it. Not just, you know, whether or not he wants to do it.
Yeah.
Stuff like,
I mean, I know
Romo,
someone.
Stuff like, can he really do a game,
right.
You know, with his brother? I think that's a legitimate thing for him to ask himself and a legitimate thing for him to discuss with people.
Yeah. I mean, would he really pass on the job because of, you know, two Giant games a year, maybe? I mean, it seems a little.
Well, I believe there may have been somebody else on that list. Unfortunately, I was told that off the record, so I can't say that person's name, but.
You mean
I think,
somebody else who he wouldn't want to call
right.
game? Oh, okay. That's an interesting one. So there's someone besides Eli who Peyton doesn't want to broadcast games for. Well, maybe the Colts or something.
I refused. He was just talking about his awkwardness or reticence about it. And
maybe Andrew Luck. All right, we'll move on. And then the Monday Night Football. Back to that. It just seems like ESPN's hell bent on doing the Tony Romo copycat thing and getting. They want a guy who goes from the field to the booth. Greg Olsen of the Panthers was mentioned. Joe Thomas, who just retired from the Browns. Someone mentioned Jason Witten, who's still playing. The copycat nature of sports TV is fascinating to me.
Well, copycat. I mean, look, Don Meredith was a player. I mean,
right, but I'm talking about going. I mean, it was very rare that you had someone. Romo went from playing to the number one gig for CBS. That does not happen often.
No, I think that's true, and but there aren't many Romos, and
that's the point. It's like
know,
maybe
we don't even know if there's there. Maybe we don't even know if there's a, just even another one.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it's difficult. But I will say, of all the candidates mentioned, there is a Thomas does have some fans at ESPN, and I mean, I haven't heard any kind of like I don't know if they've done a test. Audition with him, mm-hmm. but I do know that he's got a couple of really important fans over there.
All right. Joe Thomas, that could be interesting. Before we go, Origins, I know you finish up the ESPN one. What do you have the next one coming down soon? What do we got for Origins?
So what we're going to be releasing in the next couple of weeks is. You know, we call them Origins Originals, but it's the...
Origins Originals, yes, sorry.
The uncut versions of all these things. And I will say that, you know, I think early on we're going to be doing Michael Smith and Jemele Hill. And I think for people who are used to more just traditional podcasts, those conversations, those interviews are going to be, I hope, fun for them because, you know, they get into stuff that I didn't use... In the, you know, when I'm doing a Origins chapter on something, there's many different voices, right? So, you know, you're doing like the history of SportsCenter, and I think I had like, you know, 20 people talking.
Right.
And so I was only able to use a little bit of Michael or a little bit of Jemele. We're going to be releasing all those individual conversations. The one with Overman is epic.
Okay.
It's just, he's just a great storyteller,
yeah.
And Dan Patrick and Chris Berman and everybody.
All right, so that's going to be a new series called Origins Originals from Jim. I got to ask you, too, because we've talked about this in the past with your Origins, the previous version of it. We've talked about you doing maybe a Sopranos one. I got to ask you about David Chase announcing he's doing a Sopranos prequel. What were your thoughts when you heard that?
Listen, the world needs more David Chase. So that's an easy one,
but,
right? I mean, he's just, you know, he's, I mean, obviously they can't continue because of Jimmy, you know, being gone. And, but I think that, Jimmy Gandolfini, but, I think that, it's kind of an interesting idea, you know, and, Larry Connor, who David is working with on, they worked with on the script is a fantastic writer. And, you know, for me, there were parts of Godfather 2 that when they went backward in time that were, you know, just even more spectacular than stuff in present day. So I don't mind that idea at all.
When I first heard the news, it's just, so no one from the TV cast can be in that movie, basically, right? It's got to be a whole new cast.
I don't know how
cast.
Far they're going back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not to say that that makes it automatically a bad idea. Obviously, we would love to see, you know, as many people from the cast in that as possible.
Right.
Because we love them and they're all, like, freakishly talented. But I still think that, you know, you got to give David Chase the, you know, a little wind at his back. If he's decided to do this,
okay.
I mean, it's a guy who doesn't have to do anything or right. could do anything else. If he's decided to do this, then, you know, you got to think that it's going to be pretty freaking great.
All right. That's fair. I was down on it, but, you know.
No, come on. It's David Chase. You got to give him a chance.
But I just feel like with Gandolfini gone, it's like, let it be, but. I hear you.
That,
it'll be good. David, it'll be good. It will be good.
Remember that David Foster Wallace, one of the great commencement speeches of all time.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, when you see the fat lady screaming at her kids in the supermarket aisle or the department store aisle, and you know, you just want to, like, you know, this wasn't his exact words, you know, like, just yell at her, or you just think of something. It's like, you got to consider, like, you know, maybe she's been, like, taking care of her dying husband all day, or maybe she's been, like, all the things that you don't necessarily jump to right away, as he used to call the default position.
Right.
And I'm doing that with David Chase. I just think maybe he's got all these amazing story ideas and this incredible narrative that he had from being in this milieu for so long, and we're going to get to see it.
All right. Fair enough. You convinced me.
Oh, whatever. My day is done.
I appreciate you coming on and shedding some light on the big interview. What was the feedback? Were you overwhelmed by feedback to the Skipper interview? That was a wild day on Twitter.
I wasn't. You know, at the end of the day, it's really not about me.
Right.
I mean, I was glad that people, you know, it seemed like people thought that I did a good job with it or whatever, and I'm sure that there are people who thought that I didn't. It really isn't about me. This guy went through, you know, a life event, a life crisis event, and it was incredibly public. It was incredibly visible. And so, I was just a grain of sand on that beach. It's really about, you know, I will say this, the difference between reading it and being in the room, there's nothing Machiavellian about this guy. There's nothing, you know, he's not trying to pull the wool over anybody. The anguish and the difficulties that he was going through when he was talking about these things were genuine. And, you know, I had to do my best not to, you know, I wanted to be respectful, of course, throughout. But, you know, you want to sympathize and empathize with, you know, what has gone on, even though these were decisions that he made as a grown man, and he got himself into this thing. But at the same time, he's taking responsibility for it. So, I guess the only thing that I really kind of was aware of on the negative side was that some people thought that he was, you know, doing a, you know, Sir Laurence Olivier with this thing, and it's like, it's just ridiculous. He's not even capable of it.
Well, we touched on earlier, I still feel like, you know, the story's not over. So I think that's why people may, you know, still have opinions on.
Yeah, no. Listen, by the way, like I said before, but I think it moved the ball forward. I'd like to think it moved the ball
absolutely
forward.
Absolutely, it did, no doubt. No
we're
doubt.
Hearing from him directly, not a prepared statement. We're hearing from him about his, you know, total denial that it had anything to do with female colleagues, and we heard that there was an extortion thing.
Yep.
I mean, those things alone are, you know, I hope people find them of value.
Just another day at the office. I appreciate you coming on and talking about the interview, and good luck with the new series Origins Originals, and I'm sure we will talk to you again. I appreciate you being the first guest
and,
on
and
my
congratulations
version.
Congratulations on, I guess this is the mantle of SI Podcast now.
Yes, well, we'll see. We'll see. I appreciate that.
All right.
Thanks.
Congratulations.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Ready? Rolling. All right. 3, 2, 1. All right. My thanks to Jim Miller and for coming on here for my first hosting of the SI Media Podcast. I did a bad job in the intro. I wanted to make sure I paid proper homage to Richard Deitch, and I left out that Lou Pellegrino, who was Deitch's producer, will still be my producer, and Lou's here. Are you a Sopranos fan, Lou?
You know what?
Don't say no. We're going to get off to a bad start.
We're going to get off to a bad start then.
I wanted to know what you thought about this prequel movie.
I'll tell you what. I work nights. As you know, in my past, I worked for the Scott Farrell Show.
Right, right.
And I know the show was on Sunday nights, but I just never got into it, and I never was able to
catch up.
There's
this thing now called HBO Go.
No, I know. I have HBO Go, and I do need a new series, so I do. Okay. I have watched episodes of The Sopranos, but
Disappointing.
Listen, I'm sorry. Ask me if I watched Breaking Bad or Sons of Anarchy, too.
But they're not coming out with a prequel. I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
I'm excited for it. I really am. But you know what? It's one of those, it gives me motivation now to watch it, because I know people who've watched the Sopranos series 8 and 9 times through.
Yes.
So I'm going to play catch up. I will watch, and then I will be ready for the prequel. I like the show. I mean, it's not like I just never had time
to
watch
it. I'll make you this bet. If you do watch it, you will definitely watch it a second time after you watch it the first time. There's so much.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much. So
Even though I saw the final episode.
Oh, you did?
Which makes no sense altogether, right?
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, listen, it's not like you wouldn't know. I mean, everyone knows what happened in the final episode.
Right. The thing is, I probably maybe have watched 30 episodes out of the entire series.
Okay. All right.
So I do know what's going on.
That's weird.
I know.
That's weird. 30 episodes of a 9-year series.
I'm a disappointment to the Italian culture. What can I tell you?
Oh, my God. Start with episode 1. Stop fooling around. Go straight through.
A New Hope, right? Episode 1, A New Hope. And watching episode 4.
Watching the last episode doesn't ruin any of the series for you, because it's really, when you get into seasons like 2, 3, 4, it's just, wow, forget it. So,
right.
Yeah. All right. So I did a bad job because I didn't mention Lou in the opening, and then
Don't worry about John Aran.
I go to you about The Sopranos, and then you didn't even watch
I'm just going to call you John from now on. Right. This is my new host, John Aran.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, listen, who knows how this is going to go, so we'll see. But the first episode is in the books. Like I said, want feedback, ideas, guest suggestions, anything you got from me, at Jimmy Traina, JimmyTraina. Please hit me up. And the schedule stays the same. We're going to post every Thursday. So we will see you next Thursday right here on the SI Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.